So what is one of the most important issues that the new Congress is going to have to deal with, at least in the view of the Institute for Principled Policy? Well, to find out that and more, stay tuned for this week's Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I am the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. And as you folks know, this was a momentous week. I am recording this just before airtime on Friday, so we know some of the things that are going on with the election that happened on Tuesday. And, of course, we're talking about the 2014 election. If we ever run this show as a rerun, we want everybody to know what we're talking about, so I'm going to date it a little bit. We know that the Republicans have taken control of the Senate, and they now have a larger presence in the House of Representatives at the federal level. It was pretty much a sweep also at our state level, and in virtually every state that where an election was held and state representatives and that kind of thing, not all states are on the same two-year cycle or four-year cycle. Some of them are on off years. But that being said, places like Arkansas that haven't had completely Republican-controlled legislatures for years and years and years and years, West Virginia the same way, are now under the control of the Republican Party. Now, a lot of people see that as a plus, and a lot of people see that as a negative. Obviously, they have partisanship in mind. I'm not going to come to you in terms of party partisanship, but what I want to see is real change in how things are done. And unfortunately, the opening remarks from people who are in quote-unquote leadership, at least at the federal level and, of course, at the Ohio state level, is not promising. You know that basically virtually all the Republicans that rode to victory into the Senate campaigned on no amnesty for illegal immigration. And it looks like the Republican leadership is going to try to force their hand. So we'll see what these ladies and gentlemen are actually made of. And unfortunately, I think we're going to find out, and I hope and pray that I'm wrong, but I think we're going to find out that what they're made of is the stuff that Republicans are made of, not the stuff that statesmen are made of. And there is a vast difference. A statesman basically does what's right for his country and his constituency, and especially the state that he represents in the Senate and the district that he represents in the House of Representatives. And he ignores, if necessary, taking the punishment that comes down, what the leadership of his party caucus thinks. And there have been men like that from time to time. Ted Cruz has shown that he's not afraid to do that. Perennially, Ron Paul, when he was in the House of Representatives, was not afraid to buck Republican leadership. And you can usually tell the guys who aren't afraid to buck their leadership because they never get chairmanships. You saw things that happened with, for instance, Eric Cantor, who went out and flew in the face of his constituency in Virginia, and he got thrown out of office. And that office was, the place on the Republican Party ticket was taken over by a guy named Dave Bratt, who, if I remember reading correctly, won that seat. So a longtime powerful member of leadership overstepped himself and basically thumbed his nose at his constituency and said, I'm going to do what leadership tells me, and he lost his job for it. That's one of the positives that I see. Some of the negatives that I see are people who, for instance, in our state government, I think it's not a good thing that John Kasich got such an overwhelming victory. Not that I really wanted Ed Fitzgerald to win. I did not. Let's not kid ourselves. If anybody who listens to this show knows that Barry and I did a program several weeks back in which we worked on some of the stories that were exposed about Ed Fitzgerald, and we talked about the fact that he was not going to do well at all, and he didn't. He did not do well at all. And that's because A, nobody knew who he was. B, there's a myth out there that John Kasich closed the $7 billion hole in the Ohio budget. He didn't do that, just like he didn't do it in the mid-90s with the budget that he claimed he balanced as a chairman of a committee that worked on the budget. He put things off to another day. Basically, at least at the time of, you know, they raised taxes. People don't seem to remember that the Social Security tax went up in the mid-90s. And that's how they closed some of those. They got the quote-unquote balanced budget that wasn't balanced at all. And some of the same tricks were done here. We've got the, of course, the severance tax from fracking and that kind of thing. So it looks like we have had a sales tax increase. So if you think your taxes haven't increased, folks, our sales taxes have gone up. And a number of fees and that kind of thing go up. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Now, our topic for today is what kind of issues is the new Congress going to face? And this is one of the things I'm not particularly optimistic about, and I'll tell you why. We're going to be listening to Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center, who you heard last week. And Tom DeWeese is giving a talk at Camp American in 2010. So this is the kind of things that we do at Camp American, and you can find out more at www.campamerican.com. That's www.campamerican.com. You can basically, Tom is talking about what he called our emerging surveillance society. How basically, as we are beginning to find out with Edward Snowden and actually Cheryl Atkinson, a former CBS reporter whose computer was hacked and documents were planted inside her computer, and information is now coming out. If you're not paying attention, that she believes, and I believe she's correct, that things were planted on her computer so that she could be charged with having classified information that she wasn't supposed to have. Well, reporters get classified information all the time. Some of it is the classification is questionable, and if you're shocked that the government would go out and plant information on someone in order to convict them, information that really isn't all that critical, but could lead to some kind of major problem for them from a prosecutorial standpoint, then you're really not paying attention. And that's what Tom's going to talk about in this talk. Now, one of the reasons I'm not optimistic is the fact that this emerging surveillance society that we live in has been growing all along, but it really took off when the Patriot Act got passed. And I will remind you folks that the Patriot Act was pushed through Congress very quickly with a Republican president who wanted it and signed it. Now, that bill had basically, it had members of Congress had been trying to get it passed from both parties. Interestingly, it was a Democratic bill when it first started in the 90s, and the Republicans said absolutely not. And then after the 9/11 attacks, suddenly it became something that had to be done. And if you haven't really paid attention, then basically what it does is it completely negates a huge portion of the Bill of Rights, especially the 4th and 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th Amendments. And Tom's going to talk about how it's growing, how it's being used by government, and the dangers therein. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I'll get with you at the end and tell you where you can actually get a video copy of this. We will post a link at our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. There will be a link when we post up this new audio. So without further ado, here's Tom DeWeese.
All right. Tonight, you're going to hear from Tom DeWeese again. He's going to be talking about something very important. our surveillance society and how the government is encroaching on our privacy. He's also going to talk about what's called the Real ID. For some of you, that's a new topic. For some of you, you're aware of it. But you need to pay close attention. It's important information. You always need to pay close attention, but, you know. So anyway, without any further ado, Tom DeWeese.
All right. This is a serious subject, and I want to present it to you tonight. I want you to have a good time tonight and your pirate night and so forth. But, you know, before I start, let me just tell you this. The reason that Noel and Chuck and all the folks here put on this conference or this camp and want to teach you guys things is so that when you get older and get out into the world, you're armed with truth and knowledge and know what your rights are and know what human dignity should be and what human happiness should be. We want you to have that knowledge so that you can continue the fight to preserve it. And what I want to talk to you tonight is about is a real bad situation that can deny every one of you, no matter how much knowledge you've got, can deny your ability to stand up for those things and to fight back. And that is just so serious that I'm just gonna stay serious about this, and I hope that you all catch what we're talking about and understand. Let me start out by asking you this question. How do you feel about illegal immigration? There are those who say that those coming to this country are just trying to work for a better life. They are migrants, not illegal. We don't use the word illegal. They're just migrants. They're just moving up from countries where they have a bad situation. I talked to you today about bad government and why they're poor, and they want to come to America and have a good life. The problem is that they are coming over our border at such a force that they are literally threatening our very way of life. They come here in the old days, in back in the 1800s and early 1900s, we had immigrants come here by thousands, millions, came into this country. They came from Europe, they came from Asia, they came from other parts of the world. But as they came here, they usually on a boat to get in here, coming into New York Harbor in most cases, sometimes coming from the West. They practiced English. They had some of our documents, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and so forth. They revered it. They understood how important it was. And when they hit the shores of the United States, they passed the Statue of Liberty, they were emotional, they were excited, they were in America. They wanted to be Americans and have the American liberty, the rights to live their lives as they chose. They were coming from very oppressive societies. And we embraced them, and we said, absolutely, come in. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. There's a different situation happening today. Illegal immigrants coming into this country who do not like the United States, have no intention of becoming American citizens, have no intention of learning our language, and as they're coming in by the millions secretly, breaking our laws, they're changing our communities. Crime is rampant. Drugs are coming in more and more. Whole neighborhoods are being destroyed. Families are being destroyed. And these are the reasons why a lot of us oppose illegal immigration. The question becomes, what do you do about it? Now, I contend that the way you handle that is, first of all, you enforce the law. The law says they can't come in here. And if they do come in here, then we have a perfect right to gather them up and send them away, send them back to where they came from. We have a right to secure our border, put troops on the border, put border patrol, build a fence. We have a right to keep them from getting free medical care and health and education and social security that they've never paid into, all these kinds of benefits. We certainly have a right to keep them from getting a job in this country. And that seems pretty clear, should be clear, that that you break the law, you get out of here. You hear one of the most outrageous things I hear about, there's an organization called La Raza, which stands in Spanish, it means the race. Now, we're called racists because we say we don't want these illegals coming in, mostly Hispanic, that we're racist. That's the reason we don't want them here. That has nothing to do with race. It has to do with breaking the law and changing our way of life and raising our taxes and raising our crime rate and so forth. La Raza calls itself the race. And they believe that they have a perfect right to come here and take our land, joining it back into, you know, the certain states in the U.S., the Southwest, Texas, Arizona, California, clear up into Colorado, that they should be able to take over all those and take them away from the United States, quite frankly. And that's their mantra. That's what they're working towards. So it literally is a war between citizens of the United States and illegals who want to come here and take it away from us. Our government, for quite a while, has been ignoring the laws, the immigration laws of the United States. They have been embracing. We have this argument going on that these people, we need them to come here to work. They do cheap labor. They do things that Americans won't do. You've heard this line? They do things Americans won't do. Well, first, what we did to Americans is we put in things like minimum wage laws, which make it so college kids and high school kids and so forth, companies can't afford to hire them. So they start hiring illegals to come in under the table, and that's why they work cheaper. The reason Americans won't do these jobs mainly is because the companies can't afford to hire them to do those jobs. So the government's coming at us in two prongs. They're raising the cost of American workers, and then they're helping bring in illegals to do things that Americans won't do. Well, the government has refused to build the wall in most cases. They have refused to arrest the illegals. They are refusing to allow local law enforcement to arrest and deport illegals. They're doing everything they can to keep them here. They're lowering college tuitions for them, giving them special privileges that you don't have. They're giving them free education. They're giving them free health care. Now they want to join them onto the Social Security rolls. Doing everything in their power to not stop the flood of illegal immigration. Now, some people who really, really want to stop illegal immigration have gotten desperate. And so they're coming up with all kinds of ways to try to stop illegal immigration. One of the ways that they came up with is something called Real ID. The purpose of Real ID was passed in 2005, and it was argued that this was the atom bomb in the fight to stop illegal immigration. What it calls for is standardizing the process and the format for driver's licenses, that you have to have specific documentation in order to get a driver's license. You've got to show your birth certificate. You've got to show that you're a resident here in this country. And they take a photograph. And this photograph deals with biometrics. And I'm going to get into that quite a bit here as we go along. But what it does is, if you have, how many have a driver's license? Does your driver's license have a blue background to it? If you look at it, does it have a blue background? Probably does, because almost all of them do. What they have done, that photograph is now they have reduced your facial features to a code, to digital numbers, so that you anywhere. You've been hearing the conversation going on right now, some criticism. They're saying that you're not, I know this is true in Virginia, you're not allowed to smile when you have your driver's license picture taken. Why not? Well, because it throws off the number. Throws off a number, and that they've reduced your face to a number, to a numeric code. So when they're looking at your photograph, they're not looking at your face. They're looking at the numbers. And I'll explain why in a little bit. But there are a lot of conservatives who are desperate to get real ID enforced in every single state, saying this will stop illegals from getting jobs. Now, I have a lot of problems with this, and I will go through them in detail. But one of them is this. The U.S. government, as I stated, has refused to do anything to stop the flood of illegals coming in. They've even stopped, they don't even enforce visa violations. If somebody comes in this country legally with a visa, that means the government has granted them the right to come in the country. And they tell them, you have to leave in a certain amount of time. Maybe a month, maybe 2 months, whatever. What's happening is people ignore it, and they just stay here. That would be pretty simple for the government to find those people and say, you got to leave, your visa's up. They won't even do that. But now they've come up with a plan that with Real ID, we're going to make business the first line of defense against illegal immigration. We've ignored the wall. We've ignored deportation. We've ignored trying to cut them off from services. But business. Now, business, for the most part, I said this morning that 60% or more of all the businesses in this country are small companies, 25 or less employees, and not big, huge corporations. Basically, you've got a guy who decides to start a business because he wants to produce a product, wants to make a profit for him and his family and employ people and so forth. Now, he's already the national tax collector. Just because he became a businessman and hired employees, he's now required by the federal government to tax, to collect the taxes out of the payrolls of all of his employees. And not only that, not only does he have to collect those taxes out of your paycheck. Remember, I talked to Billy this morning, had $100 already taken out of his paycheck. What we didn't say was his employer has to match that tax out of their pocket that they're taking out of his pocket for Social Security and so forth. So that tax, actually, if they're paying him $450 and they're actually probably paying him $550 in their pocket. So the businesses have become the national tax collector. Now, government wants to make business the first line of defense against illegal immigration. They want to impose real ID and have the driver's licenses block the them getting in the country and getting a job, getting a car. There's a second piece to the puzzle, and this is where the businesses come in. It's called E-Verify. Once again, this is supported by a lot of good conservatives, just like Real ID is, for the idea that this is a tool we have to have to stop illegal immigration. E-Verify is a system where they use the Social Security Administration's list. Everybody who's got a Social Security number, you go in to get a job, you apply for a job, and first of all, you have to show them your approved driver's license from Real ID. And the second thing you have to do is now the businessman has to go into a government data bank and check your Social Security number against the data bank. And if it verifies that, yes, this is a legitimate Social Security number, and therefore that person is a legitimate American citizen or here legally and can have the job. Sounds so simple, doesn't it? That will take care of illegal immigration. They just won't be able to get a job. And Americans are well protected. Right? Wrong. First of all, in putting together this information on Real ID, and they put this data bank together with these photographs in there, who's in control of that information? Who controls it? What happens to it? Well, first of all, there's an organization called the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, AMVA. AMVA is what it says. It's the managers of all the DMVs are part of this. And they are the ones that kind of come up with how these driver's licenses will be created and how they'll look and so forth. AMVA works with another organization called the International International Civil Aviation Organization, the ICAO. The ICAO is part of the United Nations. And AMVA has said, and the Department of Homeland Security has said, that real ID driver's licenses will be compliant with the ICAO standards. What that means is that that database with those photographs in it and all that background information in it is not going into a national database, it's going into an international database. What we're creating here is an international identification card, not a national identification card. First of all, let me tell you this. I believe that the Department of Homeland Security is the most dangerous organization ever created in the history of the United States. Their mission is supposed to be to protect us against terrorism, and as an added extra, that it protects us against illegal immigration. The Department of Homeland Security began, first of all, from the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act, which was passed just weeks after the 9/11 attacks, admittedly, not a single member of Congress read the Patriot Act before they voted for it. They had no idea what was in it. Now we created, to enforce it, the Department of Homeland Security. The day the Department of Homeland Security was created, it had, at that moment, 170,000 federal employees. It was made up by combining 22 existing federal agencies, including the Border Patrol, the Coast Guard, the Secret Service, FEMA, the Transportation Security Agency, Immigration and Naturalization, Customs Service, Animal and Plant Health Inspection, Federal Protective Service, FBI's Domestic Preparedness, Federal Computer Incident Response Center, and several more lesser agencies of the same type. And all of those 170,000 employees were under the control of one guy, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And there's a provision of the Patriot Act, which is the most monstrous bill ever passed. That one person has the power to send federal law enforcement into private homes without a search warrant, records and takes records and materials that may be taken from your home, computer records searched, phones tapped, and emails monitored without the knowledge of the suspect.
What's the secretary's name?
Well, now her name is Janet Napolitano. She's the new one. And she was the former governor of Arizona. And I'll read you a couple of quotes from her pretty soon. She's a real piece of work. Huh? Yeah. Now, all of these things, we've protested all this kind of thing taking place, that this was a massive invasion. We have in the Bill of Rights the right to be secure in our homes, the right to face our accusers. If you're arrested, you are innocent until proven guilty. You have a right to face your accusers. You have a right to trial by jury, that no one can come into your home without a search warrant. You have to know who's doing this and why. But as they've put all this together, this massive bureaucracy with these kinds of powers, all to protect us from terrorism and, of course, illegal immigration, I've watched time after time spokesmen for this, people from the government, when somebody questions them about their right to do this and how isn't that frightening and doesn't that create a kind of a tyranny, Here's what they always say. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. Over and over and over again. Well, before I move forward, let's get rid of this naive utterance once and for all. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. What that statement really says is the government always gets it right. So fear of searches is just nonsense. If you're innocent, nothing to fear. The second thing that that statement says is that the Bill of Rights was created to protect the guilty. Because if you're innocent, you don't even need a Bill of Rights. Let me relate to you a little story about how all this works. Chuck and I were talking about this earlier. There is a young man, he's 25 years old. His name is Steve Bierfeld. Steve is the development director, in other words, the fundraiser for Ron Paul's Campaign for Liberty. Now, back in March or so, a report came out of the state of Missouri. And that report said that anybody who supported Ron Paul for president, or Chuck Baldwin, or Ron Barr, is a potential security risk and a potential terrorist. And I'll explain all those in a little bit. But it just so happened that just a few weeks after that came out, the Campaign for Liberty put together a conference in Missouri. The conference had about 1,000 people there. They had books and tapes and bumper stickers and things like that for sale. And the day following the conference, Steve Bierfeld was bringing the box, he was bringing home with him a box of money. He had about $4,000 in cash and checks made out to the Campaign for Liberty. He made no attempt whatsoever to hide that fact. He had it in a metal cash box. I do this all the time for our own conferences. He walked into airport security, and he took the box, and he placed it on the conveyor belt right in front of the TSA agents, and they looked in it, and they saw all this cash. Now, there's nothing illegal anywhere to carry $4,000 in cash anywhere. If you make a deposit of a minimum of $10,000 or a withdrawal or make some sort of transaction of $10,000, then the bank is required to report to the federal government that you have made this transaction. They put these laws in place supposedly to stop money laundering and drug deals and these sorts of things. $4,000 isn't on the radar screen. Perfectly within your right to walk through anywhere with $4,000. TSA agent looked in there, and there are checks made out to Campaign for Liberty. Any moron could tell what this money was for. Checks were made out to Campaign for Liberty. TSA agent asked Steve, "Why do you have so much cash on you?" And Steve basically, very politely, said, "Why do you ask? Why do you have so much cash on you? Is there a requirement for me to tell you that, sir? Why do you have so much cash? Tell me why I should tell you." Whereupon the TSA agent said, "All right, you little smart aleck, we have ways of dealing with people like you." Takes him with three other TSA agents into a back room with no windows and locked it and shut the door. And they said, "Now, I want to know, why do you have all that money on your hands? Steve happened to have a telephone with a little button on it he pushed for record and recorded the entire conversation. It went on for 25 minutes. And he said, "Basically, tell me the law that says you can ask me that. Why do I have to answer that?" And whereupon you hear one TSA agent say, "That smart aleck tried that same kind of stuff out there at the security area. Little smart aleck." They said worse than that, actually. And one of the TSA agents said, You know, I want to know why you're carrying all that money. I mean, I only carry about $50 with me. Why do you have all that money on you? I just want to know why. Can't you just answer that? I want to know, sir, why do I need to tell you that? And so, how old are you? He said, I'm 25. He said, well, you answered that question. He said, well, it's on my driver's license, sir. So then they started to threaten him. All right, we don't have to mess with you up here. We'll take you downtown. We'll take you and let the drug enforcement people take care of you. Let the FBI take care of you. They'll answer you. You know, then you can get your questions answered. And Steve said, well, that's fine, sir. Will they tell me what the law is? This went on for 25 minutes. Steve never refused to give them information. He only asked him, what's the law? Whereupon, a plainclothesman walked in the room and whispered in the ear of the TSA agent, and they let Steve go. They let him on a plane, and he went home. As Chuck and I were talking earlier, that had to mean that whole thing was being monitored somewhere else. An FBI agent came in and said, let him go. You do not have the right. There is no jurisdiction for you to threaten him this way. Let him go. Because Steve kept saying, am I under arrest? You want to take me downtown? Am I under arrest? Am I being detained? Am I going to go on my own? Or are you forcing me to go? And their answer to him was, well, you can call it anything you want. When anything you want, you're going to go downtown. He said, then I'm under arrest? Never once did they tell him he was under arrest. Never once did they tell him that he had committed a crime or anything else. Because they didn't have the authority and because he did not commit a crime. This was intimidation. It was done to make him comply to them. And Steve didn't do it. What he did do was he took the tape. On Monday, after all this, how many of you watch Fox News? You see Judge Napolitano, not the same Napolitano, but Judge Napolitano, who has a show on Fox News. He happened to be at the conference, and he calls Steve, and he says, how'd the conference go? And then Steve tells him what happened, and he's got the tape, whereupon the tape was played on Fox News that night. Suddenly, the TSA was backpedaling very rapidly, saying, oh, this was not handled, not proper procedure. This is not how we do things. Want to bet? You do it every time there's not a photo and there's not a recording of it. That's what you do because that's intimidation. Now, why? Why do I bring all this up? The Real ID, find my notes here. I never can find my notes. Here it is. I have too many notes. As I said, the Real ID is connected to this international organization. What we are working towards now is creating a driver's license that is your international ID with an international ability to tell everything about you, where you go, what you do, who you associate with. Google right now, how many use Google for searches? Google keeps a record of every website you go in for the federal government right now. That's a piece of it all. Everywhere over this country, you have television cameras. Closed circuit TV cameras. You have them on street corners. You have them now in traffic lights. You have them in every public building, every airport. You have them in every convenience store. Washington, D.C. is very busy putting up these cameras in neighborhoods, telling us that's to keep the neighborhood safe, putting them up in traffic lights, telling you that's going to keep the traffic under control. And everything's designed to make you safer. Yeah.
Well, what you were talking about earlier reminds me of a film that just came out about how the government does spy on people just about last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's entitled Eagle Eye. And it's about how the CSI, I think, the Pentagon put this computer up to track people and get a hold of their email accounts and
Yep. And that's a fiction movie. It's not fiction. And we'll see here how shortly as we get into all this. The situation is this. First of all, you know, we have low-flying satellites to give off a certain frequency. They are working to up the frequency in those satellites, and the frequency in RFID chips, radio frequency identification chips. These chips are in everything now. They're in passports. They want to put them in driver's licenses. They're in products that you buy. They can track things anywhere. The day is coming where they want to increase the frequency in the RFID chips so that low-flying satellites can read them. Now, if you've got these chips somewhere on you, if it's in your driver's license, in your passport, they can track wherever you go. But it also, using these CCTV cameras, they can, let's say you're walking down the street in Berlin, Germany. You're doing nothing wrong. Cameras can pick you up there. They can read that facial digital code that has been made about you, and they can tell you're right there. And in a minute, I'll tell you about some other things that they can do that makes it even worse. Let me go back to E-Verify for a second, because there are people right now, there's an organization called Numbers USA. Anybody heard of Numbers USA? Anybody? No. Numbers USA purports to be a conservative organization fighting illegal immigration. They've got hundreds of thousands of people in their organization, in their email lists and so forth. And they've done some good work on stopping the amnesty for illegal immigration. But Numbers USA, the numbers for Numbers USA stands for population control. The reason that they want to stop illegal immigration is, and rightly so, they believe that more immigrants coming into this country raises the population, and that hurts the environment. They are an environmentalist organization. They are big proponents of controlling us through environmental regulations, which is another whole talk. They are not conservatives. They are not limited government advocates. They are not constitutionalists. They want the government to control us, and they want to stop illegal immigration. Eventually, as they go into population control, they want to lower populations. It can lead to telling you how many children you can have, and eventually to abortion, and forced abortions like China has. This is where they are. These are people who are looked upon by a lot of conservatives as good guys, and they're following them on Real ID and E-Verify. And they are fighting with everything they've got to try to get this thing passed. E-Verify is, first of all, if the employer is given the mandate, they have to comply with the government to give you a job. What this means is that the government will decide who works and who doesn't. That's what it really boils down to. I've owned businesses for years. I've had hundreds of employees. And I've never had to go to a federal data bank to decide the person I'm hiring is legal to hire or not. Now suddenly that's going to change. That means the government will tell me who I can hire. And the situation is that if you go in to apply for a job and the database comes back and says you're a no match, your Social Security number doesn't work in this system, you now, the clock starts to tick. You now have eight working days to go to the Social Security Administration and get it fixed. Now, anybody who's ever had to deal with a government agency to get anything fixed knows a little bit of the nightmare that is about to be created. They are mean and nasty and take a number and sit over there and, boy, hope you don't get in the wrong line, because if you do, you got to do it all over again. Social Security Administration is not equipped to take the amount of people when you've got 300 million people in this country and you've got every single business that has to go through this system 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're going to get millions of people who are no match, whether there's a typo or something else. Social Security Administration database, the Social Security numbers, has 450 million names in it. Records in it. There are 300 million Americans. That means there's 150 records, a million records in there that are probably questionable. It's a dirty list. They never take anybody. Somebody dies, they don't take them out. Now, using the Social Security number, first of all, as the employee, the potential employee, and the people who would get caught by this aren't going to be the big CEOs up in the boardrooms who can take the day off and go wander down to the Social Security office and you know, through their limousine and get it done and can afford to take the day off. And after they spent the day there, they go, you know, go out to dinner or whatever. These are working people who need the job. They are not able, the company's not able to hire them until this is cleared up. And so they have to take their time. They have to probably ride a bus, go down to the administration. They got to go in this big, huge, crowded room day after day after day until their number comes up. And maybe, maybe not, they'll get the thing fixed. So that's the first burden that is on that. And these are legal, law-abiding Americans I'm talking about. The second thing happens. Let us say that you know, they set up the system today. You now have a job, right? You have a job right now, so you have no reason to even, you know, be involved in the system. But let's say 3 years from now, you need to get a new job, and you go to the employer, and the employer does a check, and he finds a no match. Because here's what's happened. When you make the Social Security number the number one reason to be able to get a job, what's going to happen to that Social Security number? The value of it skyrockets. This is a major commodity to have a Social Security number. You've got huge cartels that are bringing illegals into this country because it's big business for them. They make lots of money from it. Illegals coming across the border, they have an airport on the other, on the Mexican side of the border that flies planes over into desolate areas of the United States full of illegals. They're digging tunnels. They've got they bring them over over the land in certain places, and they find, if you go around the land, around where they cross, you'll find debris. Not only will you find a whole lot of Korans, that ought to tell you something, you know, the Muslim Bible, but you will also find little pieces of paper with phone numbers on them. You call those numbers, you will find they are from all over the country. When an illegal is put into this system, they are given a phone number. When they reach their destination, wherever it is in the United States, it can be Georgia, it can be South Carolina, it can be Maine, they've been given a number of a contact there to help them then get settled into the illegal community. So this is huge business, bringing them into this country. And I guarantee you, the number one lobbyists for opening the borders and allowing the immigrants to come in are the cartels. They've got their own lobbyists working in Capitol Hill to get this done. Now, what's important about that? If you put E-Verify in place, then the Social Security number becomes massively valuable. How many times have you heard about some idiot government agent or worker going home with a laptop with 35,000 records in it, with Social Security numbers and credit card information and so forth? I mean, this happens over and over and over again. What happens to those records if they get in the wrong hands? It becomes a valuable commodity. Those Social Security numbers can be sold. An underground economy comes together. Now, what if your Social Security number was one of those? Now, 3 years from now, you go to get a new job, and they find somebody's already, you know, named Jesus, just put his name in as you. It's a Social Security number. You now have to prove you are a legal American. This does absolutely nothing to stop illegal immigration, but it makes victims of all of the people in the country. And Real ID and E-Verify are two of the same animal. Now, biometrics. This is interesting. You have the RFID chip. Let me tell it to you this way. A friend of mine told this story. He said, I was in Africa last year, and we were in a Jeep touring, in a tourist thing. He said, we came across some zebra, and our very amusing African tracker turned to me and said, okay, I bet you don't know why zebras have stripes. And of course I knew the answer to this. It's obviously camouflage, isn't it? When the guy stopped laughing, which took some time, he asked me, okay, zebra, black and white stripes, Africa, do you see anything black and white? No. He told me, zebras have stripes for a very interesting reason. And the reason is that if a predator decides to attack a herd of zebra, what it wants to do is singulate one zebra, hunt it down, and exhaust it. The reason a zebra has stripes is so that when the zebra all run away, it's absolutely impossible to keep your eye on any one individual zebra. So the stripes on a zebra are actually a defense against identification. Now that caught my imagination because of the work I had. This guy worked on these kind of issues of surveillance. He said, where identification is the central problem. In nature, identification is a matter of life and death. If you can't identify things, you can't count them. You can't work out whether or not you can eat them, and you can't work on whether or not they are friends or foe. Now, what he goes on to say is that whether you're in favor of a total surveillance society, whether you're in favor of using RFID chips, is a matter of whether you are the predator or the prey. If you are the predator, then you want all the information you can possibly gather on anybody, anytime, anywhere. If you are the prey, you want to do everything in your power to keep that information out of their hands. So, we're always hearing that the good guys need better technology to catch the bad guys. We watch CSI on TV every week, and we're fascinated by how fast they can solve the crime by some little tiny piece of DNA or a little piece of this over here, and they get in those computers and they type real fast. I'm always wondering, how do they know all these little details to go into to find this and that instantly? That is the vision that they dream of. Everything they need to know right now. And the message, of course, is they catch the bad guys and they keep the rest of us safe. Well, that all depends on who are the bad guys. Because laws change. There was a time when everybody carried a gun on their gun belt. There was a time when there wasn't any government agency for trade and for of course, there was EPA and all these. And now, today, all those federal agencies have rules and regulations that make it illegal to do a whole lot of stuff that used to be legal. Who are the bad guys? Tomorrow, what if all of this surveillance was in place 100% and had round-the-clock accuracy, biometric facial recognition, numeric codes of your face? You know, not long ago, a couple years ago, we heard about everybody going to the Super Bowl was checked to make sure they weren't a terrorist. They did this with facial recognition and so forth. We now have what are called virtual strip searches at the airport. There's a big debate going on right now about these devices that they literally can see right through your clothes and see anything that's on there. RFID chips are used in literally everything. People may picture that it's a little chip in something. The fact of the matter is it can be a little tattoo on you. It can be just a little flake of paper, and depending on how powerful you want it to be. Business is very much in favor of this. Groceries now, and I heard a good use for one the other day. The groceries are going to start putting little RFID chips on fruit. That helps at the counter, at the checkout counter, that they can look at it. You know how now you go to buy fruit and they got to do this calculation, how many pounds for this and that, and just put it through. Now they can just run it through the same reader to see for everything else. And, you know, something, technology is a good thing. It can be used well. It's a matter of who has it in their hands. And so the businesses are looking to target you. Eventually, what they want to do, you carry an RFID chip in your passport or in your 5 minutes, oh boy, or you carry it in your driver's license. As you're walking down the shopping mall, they can tell by their records, maybe you just had a new baby. All of a sudden, an ad will pop up on a screen for diapers. You got you targeted, you know. So, okay. Let me. I'm going to go quickly because I've taken too much time with this. Here's where it gets bad. Along with these cameras, along with the RFID chips, government is now working on a new program. It originally was called the. I'm going to put it here. I wish I could find my notes. I never could find them. Well, today it's called the FAST Act, and it's literally a chance. Oh, here it used to be called Project Hostile Intent, but government decided that that was just too obvious, and so they called it the Future Attribute Screening Technologies, FAST. Now, what that means now is that government just wants to make you more secure faster, of course. Well, what it means is that it will read how you walk, look on your face, facial expression, kind of clothes you wear, and how much you sweat. Now you have those cameras, and you're walking down the street in London, England, and you've got, you know, they pick you up with this biometric thing on your face, and they're looking at how you walk, they're looking at how you are doing things, and or how you're sweating. And they can decide, we better go talk to that person. They don't need probable cause anymore. That's what it means. They can just stop you anytime they want. Now, why is this important? I'll tell you this in 2 minutes. You've heard, this is all supposedly to keep us safer from terrorists and so forth. But Department of Homeland Security issued a report that said that anybody who, here I'll quote it for you. It says, right-wing extremists, current economic and political climate fueling resurgence to radicalization and recruitment, right-wing extremism is in the United States can be broadly divided into those groups, movements, and adherents that are primarily hate-oriented, based on hate of particular religion, racial, or ethical groups, and those that are mainly anti-government, rejecting federal authority in favor of state or local authority, or rejecting government authority entirely. It may include groups and individuals that are dedicated to a single cause, such as opposition to abortion or immigration. Now, when you have this system in place that they can tell anywhere you go, they can decide who works and who doesn't, and they decide who's an enemy of the state. Who is this system being created for? It's not being created to stop illegal immigration. We can prove that's not happening. It's not being done to stop immigration or terrorism. If they wanted to stop terrorism, the first thing to do is secure the border. They're not doing any of that. What they're doing is they're targeting you because of what you believe politically. You are a danger to the state. The Department of Homeland Security is created to protect the government, not you. And this is what we've got to understand, that this kind of intimidation, there's two kinds of control. There is direct control, that's RFID chips, that's the Real ID Act, that's E-Verify, and there's indirect intimidation, and that's cameras watching, being able to tell what you do. This is the reason why we are so concerned about your future, because these things are being put into place to control everything you think, do, and say, and that's why we've got to stop it. So I will stop there, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
And that was Tom DeWeese with a presentation given at Camp American in 2010 called Our Emerging Surveillance Society. If you would like a copy of that in video format, we will post a link to Camp American. Our website is www.principledpolicy.com. You can download a copy of this audio, or you can get a video copy of this presentation. Again, www.principledpolicy.com. And we'd ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.